Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. Simon Phipps joins me this week. We're live at OSCON. We're going to be talking about Basho, the company that makes React. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps. Episode 346, recorded July 22nd, 2015. Basho Update. This episode is brought to you by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you might not have ever heard of and want to download immediately after listening to the show. We're joined today by my lovely and talented co-host, Simon Phipps. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Well, hello, Randall. It's a pleasure to be with you here once again at OSCON. This is becoming a habit now, presenting the show from the hallway. At the show, you didn't tell people just how exposed we are.
We're actually right out in the middle of the hallway here, and so if you hear noise behind us or whatever, it's because there's real people here going to real events and stuff. Although we do have the advantage of shooting like a half hour earlier, so it is still fairly quiet here. So probably going to be okay. So we'll see how it goes. Like I said, we are live from OSCON. We have a very special guest with us today, someone who is also presenting at OSCON and wanted to have a chat with us. It's Heather McKelvey, who works for the Basho company, and we had React, their main product, on about 5 years ago. I think it was, let me look at my notes here, in August of 2010. And I think a lot of things have happened to React since then, and a lot of things have happened for the Basho company as well. So we're going to bring Heather on in just a few minutes to talk about all the changes with that. React is a key value store for large data, scales well, at least as far as what I know from remembering from the show from 5 years ago. Obviously, we'll need an update on how that's all changed in that period of time. Simon, what do you know about React?
I know approximately nothing. So I'm going to be looking forward to finding out more about the products and the company. Reading around the subject a little bit, I'll be very interested to find out about the community profile of the software.
Yes.
And the business models associated with it, the degree to which there's software freedom in the projects. So I'm going to be asking questions about that, which I guess is really why you want me here.
That's always why I want you here. Yes, you're always really good. I'm always the geeky guy. It's fine. You've got some geekiness to you, though, so it all works out.
I had some once when I was young.
Yes. Okay. Well, before we bring on Heather, though, I have one very important special announcement to make. It turns out that whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean provides developers with Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. I personally am a DigitalOcean customer. I found out about them at Scale about 5 months ago, and I've had my own little servlet sitting there. It came up in 55 seconds, just like they say, because DigitalOcean is built for developers, is used by over 400,000 of them, including me. You can deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. You get to choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and even FreeBSD. My machine's FreeBSD because that's my favorite distribution of things there. The servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigs of RAM, and 640 gigs of SSD hard drive space. There's auto backups and snapshots that let you easily clone, deploy, and resize droplets as you grow. And you have extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your droplet. Want to deploy Docker? Set up a mail server? They've got you covered. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 a month. There's also hourly pricing available, starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. We appreciate the DigitalOcean sponsorship of Floss Weekly. So now, on with the show. Heather, Heather McKelvey, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Very cool. And usually at this point I say, where are we speaking to you from? But I know it's right there. I can see you right over there. See, she's right over there. So why don't you go ahead and give us the third... I got to do switching here now. I forgot about that. Why don't you give us the 30,000-foot view of what's happened to React in the 5 years since, and what are these new products you're also rolling out?
Wow. Well, I've been with React about 9 months, so I can tell you some of that, but not all 5 years' worth. We have done a great job of building a key value repository that's used by many of the Fortune 500 customers we have today and our open source community. Our open source community has picked up on it for a very scalable, highly available key value store for a NoSQL database. We also support many different client accesses to it, including C, C++, Java. Our utilities are built in, our core infrastructure is built in Erlang, but support for Go, Node.js, .NET are also available as well for client libraries. The other interesting thing that we have found that has happened in the last few years is our open source is key value store uses infrastructure called React Core. And many of our open source customers have built their own distributed systems using React Core. So we have people using our key value repository, but we also have people who've built queuing systems on React Core, who've built actually trading systems on React Core, much to our surprise. So we've seen a lot of growth. We've seen a lot of uptake. We've also seen a lot of uptake in the enterprise. And we've seen growth beyond what we originally thought would happen in scalability to getting onto petabytes of data being stored in our key value store. The company's taken a interesting growth pattern in that we are very close with the academics. We have done a lot of work to do research and implement a lot of what our cohorts in academia have been researching. A great example of that is our CRDTs, which are commutative replication data types. And when you have a NoSQL database, one of the unfortunate things that happens when you don't want to lose data is on occasion you get divergent data. Mm-hmm. You get siblings cropping up because you don't want to lose data. To resolve that, in many cases, we have in the past and our competitors in the past have asked the client to determine how to resolve the divergent data. With CRDTs, you can see the data types resolving that divergent data themselves within the infrastructure. We released that over a year and a half ago and have seen great uptake in it. The CRDTs have been very, very good evolution for the NoSQL database and for our customers to be able to resolve the divergent data. And that's what you're going to see a lot more of coming soon. Customers are less interested in understanding what data to keep and what data to throw away. They want the system to do it for them, and we're getting much smarter about that going forward.
Awesome. That was a nice long answer. I like nice long answers, so that's great. So let's take it back a couple steps. So React is a NoSQL key value store, data store. But what was that piece you were talking about CRDTs? How does that... Does that make that more reliable, or what does it do?
So when you deal with a NoSQL database, you're choosing the NoSQL database for the scalability, the reliability, and the fact that it's not going to lose data. Mm-hmm. So NoSQL databases replicate data, and it's up to you how many copies you want to keep.
Yeah.
This is very convenient in the fact that, one, if you've got three copies and they're stored on different nodes, a node goes down, you still have two copies. Mm-hmm. Okay. When a node does go down, our database actually moves data to ensure it still has three copies no matter what. Mm-hmm. When a node comes back up, it moves the data back to where it needs to be. Unfortunately, you're taking writes at the same time, and we happen to be a masterless solution.
Right.
And that means any node can take a write. And while a replication is being made, it is very common for another write to come in to that same piece of data and update. And that can actually create a divergence of data between the three copies.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Okay. Now, in the past, and this is true for every NoSQL database, in the past, all of us who provide NoSQL databases said, client, you figure out what's the right piece of data. Which, you know, could, rightly so, they've said, I don't want to have to figure it out.
Yes.
You're the infrastructure, you figure it out. So many of us used either vector clocks, and in our case, we use dotted version vectors to put a timestamp on that to try and resolve it. Mm-hmm. But on occasion, you can, with the amount of data coming into these databases, you can have the same timestamp, mm-hmm. even down to the microseconds, and the data can diverge. So CRDTs allow the system itself to resolve what should be the correct data if you have the same timestamp, but the data itself and the object is different.
Okay, so let's talk also about this. React is open source, or you wouldn't be here. There's probably some version of React, though, that's open source. Is there like a freemium edition and an enterprise edition or something? Can you describe the differences there?
Yes. The difference between our open source solution is really additional functionality. So everything that's in the key value store in open source is in the key value store in the enterprise edition. The enterprise edition includes additional functionality for cross data center mm-hmm. replication and cross data center management. And so if you're using the utility in one data center, it behooves you to start with the open source version. It has all the functionality. It's only when you move to cross data center that it behooves you to take advantage of the enterprise version.
So I've just been looking at your GitHub repository on here, and I can't find the open source license. So tell me what open source license this code is licensed under.
React?
Yes.
It should be Basho. Git Basho.
I'm looking at Git Basho. I'm looking at React KV, mm-hmm. and there's no license file in your GitHub repository, so it's not under an open source license.
It actually is. We're cleaning that up.
Ah, right. So which open source license should I have found in the Git repository?
I believe it's the MIT.
MIT license.
Yes.
Okay. And I noticed also looking at the Basho website that there's no encouragement to go engage on GitHub. I had to dig around quite a lot to find your GitHub link. Do you actually want people to collaborate over the React source code?
We actually do. We want, and in fact, all of engineering customer services pays close attention to the IRC channel. Mm-hmm. We're the ones who answer it. So yes, we do. And that's something we should clean up and promote more on the
so
site.
Do you accept pull requests?
Oh, yes.
Well, everyone accepts pull requests. Do you pay any attention to pull requests?
We pay very close attention to the pull requests. Where we, like any other vendor, sometimes come into competition or conflict is if we're currently working something that the pull request came in on. What we also do within our core infrastructure is there's things like the web machine. We're not necessarily the manager of that. So in the case of the web machine, the manager of that is actually somebody from Comcast. So we're looking at moving Logger out into a different owner of Logger as well, which is the logging facility. So we probably should be better at promoting it on our site. But we are very active on the pull requests, and we encourage them immensely.
So, again, I'm looking at the stats. Mm-hmm. To what degree would you say you have a collaborative community around React? And to what degree would you say you are actually a corporate-led software project that has a few external contributors?
We've been open source for 6 years now, so we've been very closely working with the open source community. We try and encourage it more. We have been sending our engineers to encourage it to many different shows. We just did Lambda Jam. We do a number of things with SyncFree in the EU. We encourage them to contribute it as well. So we work very hard to encourage it.
And then as you were talking with Randall, you were saying about how you have a freemium model. Mm-hmm. So now how does that work? Because generally I'm very skeptical of freemium models because I believe that giving your customers software freedom is the key value of open source. Mm-hmm. And so if the open source value stops with the supplier, what's delivered to the customer isn't actually open source. How do you feel about that? Do you actually want your customers to have software freedom?
Yes, we do.
You do?
Yes, we do. We think there's great value. There are certain times when we think that there is value in IP, and the IP that's in the EE, the only difference between that is what does the replication across data centers.
Right.
Inter-data center, you have the exact, you can scale it as far as you like. It is the exact same code that you get in the enterprise model.
So the critical test for a freemium model is whether your freemium customers are able to stop using you as a supplier.
The
real question is, if I'm using your enterprise version, to what degree am I actually free to stop trading with you and carry on using the software? How much would I lose if I did that?
You would have to implement replication across data centers if you were across data centers. Many of our customers actually start with the freemium model.
Mm-hmm.
And because all of the functionality that's in one data center is in the open source, it's easy for them to start with that. And they can have multiple clusters within one data center and do the replication within one data center. It's only when they want to go cross data center that they either need to implement that replication across the data centers, or they need to sign up for the enterprise. So for many of our customers, it's a natural transition to start with the open source, which is actually what we do. The sales model is one called land and expand. The land is open source. That's what they start with. And because it is all the same functionality in the key value store that's in the enterprise product, it's very easy for them to start with that.
Right. So looking at your extended community, how many people would you say are committing code to React who don't work for you?
That's a good question. I don't have that number. I think we probably get about 20, 30 pull requests a week.
Mm-hmm. And are those, what are those from? Are those from customers or are those from people who are not customers who are using the code elsewhere?
More so not customers who are using the code elsewhere than customers.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you have any use of the code that is unrelated to your business? So do you have anybody who's picked the code up and is using it in their business somewhere else?
Yeah. So
as a peer contributor?
As a peer contributor, absolutely. So as I said before, React KV, the repository itself, is built upon some infrastructure called React Core. And the React Core is the infrastructure that does the core infrastructure for distributing systems. We have numerous non-customers and customers who actually have built other applications that are not key value stores on top of React Core. Some of them have actually open sourced their applications.
Right.
And so we support them through that. We've actually had a couple of Fortune 500s come to us and say, we would like to open source this application we built on React Core. Can you help us with that? And we've assisted them with that as well.
Can you tell me some of the typical applications for React? I think you mentioned a few of them at the top of the show, but what problem would you be solving when you reach for React?
Highly scalable, highly available. Usually JSON is the type of data that's stored. From what we understand, from what we can divine from the open source community, but also more so what we know from our enterprise community, we're very popular with national healthcare outside the United States, where they have national healthcare.
That's everywhere. Apart from the United States.
We're very popular there because we don't lose data. We're very popular in the gaming industry. And when I talk about the gaming industry, I mean not just playing games online like Riot Games, but also the gambling industry, which is also outside the United States everywhere.
Yes. And it's a big technology sector as well.
It is a big technology sector. We are very popular with technology in general. So people who are gathering large amounts of data that are going to have to run analytics against it to understand what their business problems. So the general technology sector.
So are we talking petabytes of data in some of these stores? Or
we are talking petabytes of data in some of these stores, yes. It's the scalability is... when React started 6 years ago and over time, we've never been able to acquire that many machines or even pay that big of an AWS bill to figure out how far it can go. But we have customers who have well into the many hundreds of nodes.
Are most of these probably on something like AWS then, or what are the deployment locations?
It's I think about 50-50 between cloud, which is very commonly AWS, yes, and their own data centers.
Okay, I was looking through your literature that you sent me, or somebody sent me earlier. It looks like you're also looking at providing a platform yourself that would be kind of a hosting for React?
Yeah, well, over the years, I mean, NoSQL's been around for quite a few years now, and we've all grown, we've all learned. And a lot of what we've learned are about workloads. What are common workload patterns? And how is the data actually finally being used to answer business issues, right? And so common workload patterns have evolved. You'll see common workload patterns specific to high writes, because you cannot lose the data. You'll see a common workload pattern specific to analytics and BI, where you've got range scans of reads. You've got to do massive amount of reads. We found between ourselves and our customers and many of the open source community that these patterns then end up defining how you're going to architect your data platform. So if you've got high writes and high reads for every NoSQL database vendor, they tend to compete with each other. So you want to architect things appropriately. So there is a cliff point at which you want to separate those two workloads. And that cliff point has to do when they start competing with each other for the resources on the machines, whether they're virtual machines or dedicated, hard metal. And so what we've found is that those workloads define the architecture customers need to build, and our customers are tending to build the same platforms. They're building data platforms. Many of them are building data services available to subsequent applications or utilities on those data platforms. And so we have decided if they're going to build them, and we've got hundreds building them, maybe we should be building some portion of that so they can leverage it. And so we're releasing our data platform utilities. We're in beta with them now. We're starting with Redis support. Many of our open source community and our customers have said, I use Redis, it's great, but it's got this out of memory issue. I need a quick way to make sure it's refreshed. I'd like to use it as a cache. And so support for Redis and immediate support for Redis from React as its persistent store is one of the utilities that we're introducing. And then Spark. We, like many others, introduced MapReduce. MapReduce is a great batch utility. Spark is seeming to meet many of the customers' needs for better real-time analytics. And so support for Spark Connector has been released into beta as well.
I'm not actually familiar with Spark. You want to explain that for our audience?
It's a Apache Foundation utility. It's very commonly used for analytics. It is getting a lot of adoption. It's getting a lot of adoption. Unlike MapReduce, it seems to have better ease of analytics use and operations. It supports streaming, and the streaming means it gets analytics closer to real time.
Okay, thank you for explaining that. Yes.
Sure.
I'm just looking at my notes here. I should put myself on the screen again. I'll make mistakes. Watch it. Okay. I let anybody do this show, so there we go. I'm thinking in terms of what kind of a workload is this on the operations team as opposed to, the people who are building the code? Is it really simple to just drop in and make it work, or do you have to do a lot of thinking and planning like you were talking about earlier?
Yeah. Well, when we originally built React KV, one of the goals we had, and still is one of our common goals, which is ease of operations, ease of use, even ease of installation, get it up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's natural for us to extend that requirement and that goal to the data platform solutions so that people can easily install Spark, have it run with React, have it run with their existing data. Spark, as it stands today, is reliant on a utility called ZooKeeper. And the reason for that is Spark is a master and worker cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And ZooKeeper does something called the leader latch election service for it. It tells Spark, here's your leader. And when a leader fails, it tells it, here's your new leader. We felt that Zookeeper, while it's useful, was just one more component. So we built our own leader latch election service built on top of React. And so it removed one more component for the ease of installation and getting the solution up and running more quickly.
Okay, very cool. And are there like Docker containers and stuff set up with this already so I can drop it into an existing solution?
We actually are going to be releasing some Vagrant containers. Docker will come after that.
Okay.
But that we do support use of Docker, Vagrant, Ansible for orchestration. And a lot of that is actually originally contributed by the community. They continue to contribute to it and some of this, and it will be open source.
Awesome.
Yep.
So I'm going to follow up on the open source a little bit further.
Yeah.
I'm quite interested in your choice of the MIT license for React, because my experience is that companies that are going to use a freemium model typically use the GPL, because the freemium model is often associated with a tactic that I call scareware, where you the customer, once they've started using the software, doesn't want to be subject to the terms of the GPL and so therefore buys the enterprise version. Mm-hmm. Now, you picked the MIT license. Why did you pick the MIT license?
You're beyond my history now. Right. I'm not sure. I'm actually not sure. I don't know why it was picked, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So supplemental. Tell me about your contributor process. Do you get contributor agreements from your contributors when you accept pull requests? In other words, do you ask for ownership of the copyright when people make contributions and so accumulate it in Basho, or are you developing a community-shared copyright model?
It's a community-shared copyright model, yeah.
So how does that affect your ability to offer your premium version?
Oh, again, the open source... Okay, for each component that's in open source, such as React KV, that is exactly what is in the enterprise version. There is no difference. Once what is in the component that's called Logger or the component that's called Cleek, which is our CLI command interface, all those components, our handoff component, that is all exactly the same code that sits in our enterprise version. Right. It's only additional packages that are in our enterprise version.
I suppose by using the MIT license, an MIT license is as good as a copyright grant anyway, because that's basically all it says is you can use my stuff in the license. So that must mean your contributing process is quite simple. You can just accept pull requests as long as the pull request states that it's under the license of the project. You're golden with that.
Yeah.
I didn't see whether there was any of that in the project. It looked to me like there wasn't very much of a contribution instruction in there.
Yeah, Basho is, shall we say, we lapsed a little bit in our support of the resourcing for building the community, not in support of the engineering portion of the community, but more of the marketing and outreach to the community. We did lapse for a little bit. And we've now rebuilt that, and so we have a really great leader for it, Matthew Brender.
Right, so you have a community leader.
Yes.
So, to what degree is that making a difference to you as a company, having that open source community? Because again, I've worked with a number of startup companies, and they're very skeptical about the value of an open source community contributing to their core code. They tend to see that as interference rather than assistance. How do you feel about it?
You cannot get as much done with your own engineering team as you can get with a community, flat out. You also can't get as many great ideas. We all know when you bring 10 engineers together, you get some really great stuff. But when you bring hundreds of engineers together and they're all passionate, you get a lot more. Do you get a lot more conflict? Absolutely. Is it good, energetic conflict? Absolutely. And so we actually we end up having a much better, much richer, and quite frankly, a more stable solution, especially when they follow the code of conduct, they do their unit tests, they have invested in what they are contributing into the source.
Right. So you do. So there's some governance for your community as well. You're not just using there's something that I call Git governance, which is where we do our own thing and you make pull requests and we might accept them. That's what I call Git governance.
Yeah.
So you're doing more than Git governance. You have a code of conduct. You have some published unit tests. You have a workflow. You have a build farm, perhaps.
We do have a bill form. It's called Giddy Up.
Right.
You can go to it and see exactly how poorly or well we're doing passing our tests. It is out there, open to the public. We are like every community. Whether you're moving fast or moving faster, keeping up with the test is always secondary to keeping up with the keeping up with the submissions. And so we do encourage folks to bring in as many unit and preferably integration tests as possible. We add that back into something called React Test. We also have Basho Bench, which is open source, which is the benchmarking utility. We encourage people to contribute to Basho Bench. And so it's very easy for people to see how things are performing.
So another direction that I was going to ask about was about how you make decisions about the code direction with your community. Are you setting the roadmap for the direction the code takes, or is it being driven by contributions that are coming in from your community, or is it a mix of the two things?
It's a mix of the two things. We have our own roadmap that where we are getting direct feedback from the community and our customers. In some cases, not all components are managed by us. And so that manager is responsible for contributing and helping to set the roadmap as well. And so we ask for their feedback as well. We don't, the manager really has the last say over where that component's going.
Okay. Okay. So now I have one more line of inquiry to have with you. No SQL is a very busy market.
It is.
It has a sizable monkey in the market that you might even call a gorilla in the shape of Mongo. How do you feel you're doing in that marketplace in comparison to the many, many other NoSQL databases? So, as an aside, I've always been fascinated by the idea of NoSQL databases because we've had key value stores behind relational databases ever since they were invented. So the sudden desire to use the relational store, the store without the relational engine, is always fascinates me. But of course, there's loads of them out there because it's one of those enjoyable software study problems to design a key value store. Mm-hmm. So how are you doing? I mean, how are you facing up to this massive competition from all those other key value stores and all those other large data array systems that are out there?
So you bring up a great one, Mongo. Mongo is a very valuable NoSQL store. It is easy for people to use because it is has a lot of the same concepts that a relational database has. So it's easy for them to latch onto. And I think they did a great job building it. What they find on occasion is that if people do not thoroughly think through how they're going to do the key construct in Mongo, they end up loading a lot of data into the database and then having to reshard. And sometimes that resharding forces people to bring the database down.
Right.
Okay? I think that's one of the challenges Mongo has run into. I think they're very popular. We're finding numerous people who have been using Mongo for 4 to 6 months looking around again. It is a great way to start. It's a very valuable database. They've done some great work recently on their performance and their scalability. But many people, when they start out with a NoSQL database, whether it's Mongo or us or anything else, forget that it's not the case that you don't need to understand the NoSQL database, right? You've got a difference in this adoption scenario. In a relational database, you've got somebody who's hired a bunch of DBMS people. They have a lot of knowledge. They have a lot of investment. And so they want to consolidate to one. In the case of a NoSQL database, it's usually a software engineer who's being asked to go do the proof of concepts with some set of requirements. And that software engineer is going to choose a solution that meets the requirements they're looking at. What we find very often, and before joining Basho, I was CTO for a cloud company in San Francisco. And one of the things we saw was of our 70 the 70% of the largest customers, two-thirds were running three NoSQL databases on our cloud. And they were all three different NoSQL databases, which got me curious. I was like, why? Why is there this, you know, well, we'll choose three different solutions. And what? And it came down to the fact that it was a software engineer making a decision based on a requirement that they understood for a specific workload. So very often they might choose MongoDB, then they might choose Cassandra, then they might choose React. And it was differing requirements that made them choose. With NoSQL databases also, it's quite frankly much easier to move the data.
Yes, it is.
And it's much easier to move to a different solution when you find out the original requirements you started with when you reach scale are no longer the same requirements. And so that is not unusual to have happen as well.
We actually have a question from the chat room. We have a chat room that's going on live during the show, and it's who ate my tuna? Beautiful handle, I'll tell you. That's great. Now, what are they doing differently to lower the barrier to entry to using their platform over something like MongoDB? Or did you just answer that? I don't, it's part of that answer is probably there. But if there's anything else you want
part
to say about that.
Part of that answer is probably there. We are in the process of working on new, shall we say, opinionated versions of React KV. And one of the things we're investigating is possibly a SQL-like language, which makes it very easier for people to move from a relational database to a NoSQL database. I would say one of the biggest challenges for many NoSQL users for the first time is there is no query language, or the query language is not as rich as you have in a relational database. And what we're finding in the evolution of NoSQL databases is different types of new query languages cropping up. Clearly something very akin to a SQL query language is very useful. We're also looking at new types of query languages based on materialized views. And possibly even pre-materialized views. So I think part of the evolution we'll see over the next year or so is new and much more useful query languages for the relational for the NoSQL databases.
So will the query language be a lot like what Hadoop does then, to kind of do the MapReduce stuff, or is it going to be something entirely different?
I view the MapReduce and the Spark as more of an analytic solution. I think the query languages will be based on just trying to get to the data you're at, whereas analytics is a different type of solution of trying to get massive amounts of data and get information out of that massive amount of data, which is what you're going to use MapReduce for or Spark.
Okay, that clears it up. And in fact, that leads right to my next question, which is there anything else on the roadmap, either short-term or long-term, that we haven't talked about yet that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
So one of the interesting things that is bubbling up as one of the common, more solidified work patterns is time series-based solutions. And time series-based solutions are very, very useful for many people. Many people out there don't even know they're building time series-based solutions on their NoSQL databases. and so what you'll see is a lot better solutions for large amounts of read scans, quantas, being able to read a quanta of data. Will be very important. And this can be a challenge in a NoSQL database because you've replicated this data all around a very large cluster and making sure that you're getting back what you need to get back. Something else that we're seeing a lot of use of in the 2.0 release a year and a half ago, we introduced strong consistency. And strong consistency takes it back to, yes, we will guarantee you this is the correct data situation. Where, as opposed to eventually consistent, which is, it may not be the absolute latest, but eventually it will be consistent around the node. And so strong consistency, we're seeing a strong demand for. Mm-hmm. No pun intended. Sorry.
That's good.
And so strong consistency is also influencing a different type of work pattern as well.
And but it sounds like at some point to get strong consistency, you have to violate the CAP theorem. Or are you just saying that you're emphasizing the C over the AP?
You're emphasizing the C over the AP. You're never, if you started out as eventually consistent, you're never going to get rid of that. The unfortunate secret, and this is true of relational databases as well, is with strong consistency, your performance is going to degrade somewhat. Because now you're saying, I have a quorum, and that quorum must say Yes, this is the correct data.
Awesome. Well, we've asked a lot of questions. You've answered a lot of questions. Is there anything we didn't ask that you wanted to make sure our audience is aware of before we let you go?
So this is an exciting time. We're with all of the workload patterns emerging, not just from people's usage, but from some very interesting research that's being done. I think eventually in the next couple of years, we're going to see a consolidation in this industry. But we're also going to see much more useful utilities out of box, so that as people build their data platforms, they can easily have them up and running in very little time, just as they do now with a NoSQL database. And that's going to be a nice evolution of the utilities. The other thing that's interesting is we see customers building new types of data systems, data services. Data services you never thought would be there 10 years ago. Things that allow you to market given what the weather is in a specific location. So new types of data services will be very interesting as we move forward. And many of the leaders in this are realizing that they're not about getting to the business solution, the business answers they need, but they're actually evolving their company into being a data services company.
That's a really awesome answer. Thank you for all that. And thank you for the interview. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. This is great.
All right. That was Heather McKelvey, who is representing Basho. So what do you think, Simon?
Well, it's all quite interesting. When I was at MariaDB, I took a good look at the NoSQL market, and it is indeed a rich, vibrant, and lively place. And looking at this project, I hope that they're going to focus some more on their community engagement, because I think that could be what they need to do to differentiate in what Heather mentioned when she was speaking, was going to be a consolidating market soon. I think that's going to be important to them. And my sense was that community engagement was needed some fresh fuel. So the technology itself looks perfectly serviceable, as they say. It looks like it's probably good stuff.
Okay, very good, very good. Well, let's talk about some upcoming guests. We're just wrapping up the show here. Next week we have Talky. That's a video chat and screen sharing application. Just added to the list because we were talking to them and wanted to talk to them here at OSCON, but we can't fit four different guests into the same half-hour slot. So we're going to be having an update on OpenStack. It's been 5 years since OpenStack was announced. In fact, announced on this very show 5 years ago. Very, very awesome. But they're going to come back and tell us what has happened in those 5 years. Immediately following that, also added to the schedule just now, is a CoreOS update. CoreOS, so we talked to them only about a year ago, but it's been a lot of stuff that's been happening. They've just announced recently, or in the last couple days, a new project called Tectonic, which is a mix of Kubernetes, which we're also going to be talking to in a couple weeks, plus CoreOS, plus Docker. We've got Harlan Sten, a network time protocol. We've got Kubernetes, like I said, Google's cluster management. We've got FWK NOP, which I don't know how to pronounce without it being bad. So I think I'm just reading the letters from now on. It's a port knocking next generation stuff, single packet authorization, all that sort of stuff. We have Gambas, which is a free object oriented BASIC inspired by Visual Basic. iChinga, which is a fork of Nagios. We can talk about how forks are sometimes hostile like then. Scalable and extensible monitoring system, that is. And we're bringing back we're bringing back Dart, because there's been a whole lot of stuff that's happened with Dart community in the last couple of years since we had Seth Ladd on. We're actually going to have Casper Lund, who's one of the key developers, and Andrew Sandholm was one of the community coordinators. That ought to be really fun. So those are all found, of course, on the twit.tv/floss homepage, the homepage for the show. There's a link there to the big spreadsheet that has all the information on it, including all the guests that we're already in the middle of talking to. If there's a project you want on this show that is not on that list, please have the project leader or the community coordinator email me, merlin@stoneedge.com. That email address is on the homepage, twit.tv/floss. We do have a live stream while we're taping it. We usually tape at 8 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. And you can go to live.twit.tv. You can actually make your own comments. We took a couple questions from the chat room there. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus. You can follow that also mirrors over to Twitter, Floss Weekly. You can follow me at Merlin, MERLYN. That's my Twitter handle. I'm also Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. I was a guest on Decentralized, which is a podcast about Bitcoin and decentralized decision-making, things like that. If you go to decentralized.fm, you'll find the show. I think it's last week's show. I was also a guest on the KluCon podcast, which is about the voice over IP conference, Free Switch and all that. I think, how do I, just find it. Just Google Clue Con Randall Schwartz. You'll probably find that particular interview. I did a brief introduction to Dart. That's on my slide share. This is a talk I gave down at Fizzlay last week or 2 weeks ago. Just a little forward announcement. I will be at the Heathrow Sofitel the evening of July 31st in preparation for a 14-day cruise coming out of there. So I'll be tied up between 6 and 7, but if there's anybody that's anywhere near that area and wants to hook up with me, watch my Google Plus announcements or my Twitter announcements, and we'll find a way to get together. And then it'll be gone for 2 weeks. The show will be in good hands, though. We'll still have shows going on. In fact, it's the two shows that we just scheduled, OpenStack and CoreOS. Good friend Aaron Newcomb is going to be managing that for us. And I think that's all I want to plug right now. Simon, do you think you want to plug?
So in addition to those things, if you're at OSCON at the moment, I'm going to be wandering around the show with my trusty 4K TV camera, constructing a clip show for the inevitable period somewhere over the 2 months where we drop the ball and there actually isn't a Floss Weekly. So if you'd like to record a 5 to 10 minute discussion about your open source project, catch me in the halls at OSCON and we can do it there and then with my my magic Steadicam. I'm going to be attending FrostCon, the German open source conference, which is held in St. Christoph near Bonn. That's going to be in the weekend of the 22nd of August, and I'd love to see you there. I'll also be attending the LibreOffice conference, which is being held in Scandinavia, the 23rd, 24th, and 25th of September. And there is a fighting chance that I may find myself at OSCON Europe on the 26th to the 30th of October. If you're going to be attending any of those, I would be delighted to see you. I'm still writing for InfoWorld occasionally when I can persuade Eric to buy my stories. I'm writing a column every month in Linux Voice magazine, which you should be subscribing to because it is a great grassroots Linux how-to magazine. Apart from those things, that's all I have to push at the moment.
Very good, and thank you, Simon, for stopping by and helping me do the interview, and we'll see you again next time on Floss Weekly.